Hey, WAG listeners, it's Allison, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Candleland supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Candleland shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of our podcasts.
We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Candleland supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. For $2 a month, you can become a supporter and do your part to ensure we can continue making this show. And we really like making this show for you.
Basically nothing costs $2 anymore. You could, get a bag of candy, a locker at a public swimming pool. I've been honestly trying to think of something that cheap, and I'm not getting far.
So sign up for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas. As the days get longer and it's lighter earlier, I hear people talking about having trouble sleeping in. My advice to them is to screw the blackout blinds and eye masks and just upgrade to a Douglas mattress.
Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/candleland to claim this offer. That's douglas.ca/candleland.
Check it out.
Sarah Jamma, you are named. You must leave the chamber. The member is currently not eligible to be recognized in the House pursuant to the order of the House adopted October 23, 2023.
Yeah, but he can't, speak to her, for the remainder right?
Of the day, or she can't speak to... Oh, yeah, he can't. He can't.
He can't recognize her?
...in the House pursuant to the order of the House adopted October 23, 2023.
So when they're named, does that mean they're literally named? Like, that's why he, instead of calling her the member for what Hamilton Center, he says her name?
Oh, I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, it seems like it, because otherwise he wouldn't say Sarah Jamma.
And that's happened each time. This is like a Rumpelstiltskin thing, where at least as soon as you say the person's name, that strips them of their power. So, I mean, you can't see in the video, but Sarah Jamma, even if she wanted to get up and walk out, she's not physically able to do so, correct?
Well, she has a special desk for her wheelchair, so she's sitting in her wheelchair at the desk, so she can leave.
So they have to physically...
The issue was that she wasn't, so the sergeant-at-arms, you can see, is now going. He had just gone and spoken to her, told her to leave, and then he walked back up to the speaker, kind of said something quietly in his ear, and the speaker...
Start the clock. I'll recognize the leader. No, we're not doing point of order.
Besides, thinks about what he's going to do here.
Opportunity to place a supplementary
question. Yeah, carrying right along.
So that was MPP Sarah Jamma being ordered to leave the legislature during question period on April 25th due to her wearing a keffiyeh. It's since happened on at least two subsequent occasions. In each case,
she did leave the other two times. Today she left. Today this happened again on Monday. And she left without dispute. But on this April 25th day, she stayed in her place at her desk.
And they had to physically remove her?
No, they didn't remove her. They just finished question period with her there because the prospect of removing a black woman in a wheelchair by force clearly did not seem to appeal.
Oh, that crossed the line.
Yeah. So they never said that's why they didn't remove her or what was happening, but that seems to be the case. The photo that ran on the front page of the Toronto Star the following day was notable for a few reasons. One, it was a cell phone photo taken by Toronto Star Queen's Park reporter Chris Rashawi. And it's an amazing photo, but it's very grainy when it's blown up and printed on newsprint. But it's of the sergeant at arms leaning over and talking to Sarah Gemma. She sits there with her head kind of bowed and a keffiyeh on. And what I think is incredibly stark about this is the three pages standing behind her. So for those who don't know, Queen's Park has a page program, which allows, I believe, kids in like the later years of elementary school can come and be part of the page program for a week. And they get a week off school, but they kind of learn about the legislature and they act as pages. So they wear little black jackets and ties and they carry water to and from MPPs. And yeah, so they're in the chamber and one of the three girls is wearing a hijab. At least one of the other girls is a person of color and they're just looks like they are really experiencing a moment they're going to remember with the sergeant at arms telling this MPP to get the fuck out for wearing cultural attire.
An MPP who isn't allowed to speak up in her own
defense. Who also
defense,
is not
yeah.
allowed to speak up in her defense because of a censure motion.
Back in the fall.
Yeah. They said it, or the speaker said it there, October 23rd, I think he said, was the motion when it was dated. So she's already been silenced, and here they are determining whether to heave her out by force.
So this is someone who isn't allowed to speak up in her own defense without it being deemed inappropriate. And we're seeing, like, yes, you know, the legislature use the weight of the state to remove from a space someone whose very presence is seen as a political affront. I feel like there's a metaphor here.
I'm Allison Smith, publisher of Queen's Park Today and Alberta Today, a publication where we're covering how the police in Edmonton and Calgary kicked the shit out of a bunch of protesters over the weekend.
And I'm Jonathan Goldsby, news editor at Canadaland. And I can remember back when Doug Ford said, well, no, he and his brother couldn't possibly be anti-Semitic because their doctor, dentist, lawyer, and accountant were all Jewish.
And this is Wag the Doug, a monthly podcast about Doug Ford.
So today on the show, we're going to talk about how the war in or on Gaza, depending on your preferred preposition, has been intersecting with Queen's Park since the fall and certainly more recently, and how what Doug Ford and his ministers are saying or have been saying may or may not end up shaping the responses to the encampment protest in this province.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the story of how the war on Gaza and October 7th was impacting Queen's Park was pretty one note for a long time. It was, you know, the PCs very strongly standing with Israel and very harshly
rebuking Sarah Gemma
and the NDP until the NDP kicked her out of caucus, and then they kind of let them off the hook.
Ontario New Democrats have removed one of their MPPs from caucus. Leader Merritt Stiles says she had no option after Sarah Gemma refused to delete a statement she posted about the Israel-Hamas war.
So that was kind of it, other than you know, Ford occasionally weighing in on maybe incidents of anti-Semitism or stuff like that. Or maybe he was asked about protests in the streets and he would say, we don't like that. Be safe out there, folks. But that was kind of it until the speaker, Ted Arnott, who our listeners heard off the top, determined in April that he was going to ban the keffiyeh. And he decided that it was making the scarf, which is highly associated with Palestine liberation movements and has been for a long time, was a political symbol and not a cultural symbol. And therefore, it was not appropriate to be worn in the not just the House, the chamber, because that would be one thing. But he said the entire legislative precinct. And I think that.
Yeah, that includes the whole building of Queen's Park, as well as at least a couple of the adjacent government office buildings.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the speaker, just to explain to people, he basically has not a completely unfettered, but nearly unfettered and unilateral power to define what is and isn't appropriate in the legislature, correct?
Yeah, that's true. Everything kind of happens at his behest, like including the press gallery, for instance. Mm-hmm. He gives them permission to be a press gallery, but ostensibly he could take that away.
And this, so it's one of those positions that most of the time is just making things run as procedure. You think like that has a lot of power, and it does have a lot of power, but it usually only comes up, I guess, now and again when there is a little shit show like this, when the speaker makes a ruling that is contentious and or ill-conceived, such that their own particular weighing of values or interpretation of facts may be at odds with how other people might see them.
Well, it's interesting. So you call it a ruling, and that is true. But the interesting part about it is that it wasn't distributed to people in any sort of mass communication way. Like, as a member of the press gallery, we do get bulletins about security related stuff at Queen's Park. Not often, but sometimes. So there's a way to convey information such as this. And there was nothing. The first people that found out about it were, at least my understanding, NDP staffers that had been trying to get in the building to go to work and were told they weren't allowed if they were wearing that. And then I believe Sarah Jama the same day was informed of the same thing as well. So he made an edict, but he didn't tell anyone about it, which I think is also strange.
Because basically it's, because it's already on the, it's already at least theoretically in the books that you can't wear things that carry political meanings or political weight.
Mm-hmm. In the chamber.
In the chamber.
But yeah. I think the rules of what you wear to work at Queen's Park are a lot looser. I don't think they exist at all. Like, I mean, I've never heard of, I mean, in the BC legislature, they have a rule that women can't wear, or at least they maybe got rid of this, but women couldn't wear like tank tops or sleeveless shirts. I think this would have been controversial no matter how the speaker announced it. But the way he did it was, I guess, sneaky, yeah.
So,
I would say.
That's what I was saying. There's a longstanding rule in the books, but he's offering an apparently novel interpretation of that rule to account for something that is, in his view, a political symbol, but, you know, more broadly is a statement of cultural identity. And those are not, are those typically looked down upon? Like if someone wanted to wear religious, But, and the people regularly stand in the chamber to request permission to wear this or that for various causes against
various diseases.
Yeah,
like we want to wear a Raptors jersey because they're in the playoffs, or I want to wear a purple ribbon. Mm-hmm. And then they have to get permission to do that. But like it's always granted because it doesn't matter. But again, that's the chamber. That's not the whole precinct.
So I was, when this emerged in mid-April, I was really kind of relieved and impressed that the premier came out against it reasonably strong way, basically saying this is not in his words, but saying this is bullshit. And I was like, oh, that's good. And then it was very apparent that, you know, the leaders of all the parties were very much against the speaker's ruling. And my understanding of speaker's rulings is that upon the unanimous consent of the legislature, they can be, or I don't know if they can be overturned, but at least the speaker would say, I think it had indicated that if the legislature gave us unanimous consent, he'd reconsider, or like he'd be like, okay, I'll defer to you.
Yeah, Ford said, the decision to ban the keffiyeh was made by the speaker and the speaker alone. I do not support his decision as it needlessly divides the people of their province. And he called on him to reverse it. I do want to point out that the reason that the speaker Ted Arnott gave for doing this was that he received complaints from MPPs about the keffiyeh being worn. And simultaneously, in the last few months, Sarah Jama had started to wear a keffiyeh. She says that's for her own religious purposes, that she kind of had always wanted to wear one, but then never felt like she could, and then determined during Ramadan, I believe, that she wanted to start wearing one all the time now. So that, I mean, I don't think that that's, that could be very, could be correlated with her political opinions on Palestine. But I think it's also something beyond that. Like, she's not simply wearing it in protest, is my understanding.
It's not that the rules don't apply to me. The rules very specifically apply to anybody speaking about anti-Palestinian racism. And that in and of itself is political. And that in and of itself is a testament to anti-Palestinian racism that is rampant here and across this country.
Are you worried about further repercussions now?
What other repercussions could possibly be put in place?
Okay, so then the legislature did attempt to get unanimous consent to overturn this ruling. You didn't get unanimous consent, and because the unanimous consent votes are not recorded, because it's literally everyone shouting at once.
Agreed?
No, agreed.
I heard some noise.
What we knew, or I think what we heard, or what was reported, was that Robin Martin, the MPP for Eglinton Lawrence, the PC MPP, was one of the ones, was a person clearly in favor of this, upholding the speaker's ruling.
Yeah, and she owned that. Like, she told reporters after that she did it and did it on purpose. So it's not a secret that that she opposed it.
It's been appropriated by the left, I think, certainly in the federal legislature and here.
And yeah, and Robin Martin's been the most outspoken. There's no shortage of examples of her, you know, asking for special dispensation to wear ribbons for about several different diseases in different days.
So after she voted it down, she said she was simply upholding the legislature's rules against clothing making political statements, noting that Israel supporters are not allowed to wear T-shirts that say free the hostages or wrap ourselves in a flag.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it soon emerged that on at least a couple occasions in the past few months, she has worn to the legislature what very much appears in photos to be IDF dog tags, or at least some sort of jewelry or other sort of pendant in the distinctive shape of IDF dog tags. They have sort of like four holes in the middle because they can be broken in two in theory. And they're probably not actual ones. They're probably ones that just like say like bring back the hostage or some such. But I mean, that is
novelty dog tags.
Novelty dog tags. Novelty dog tags. Fundraising dog tags. But I mean, that is at least as much, arguably much more of a direct political statement than general expression of cultural identity.
I mean, wearing the dog tags, I think she probably got away with it on a like procedural level because the speaker can't see
that.
Yeah, exactly what every single person is wearing. Like, he's like, that's just not how you look around in a room full of people that you see every day. You're not like analyzing their fashion. So there's been a lot of twists and turns since then that I don't think we need to get into all the details of. However, I think the heat on this appears to be waning. The NDP had and its leader, Murat Stiles, had said they were going to try to force a recorded vote on it by making an Opposition Day motion. Mm-hmm. Today was the plan.
Today being Monday.
Today being Monday. May 13th. Was their Opposition Day. So they were going to try to force everyone to actually have to vote on it, which I guess would like snuff out the PC MPPs by name that opposed it, maybe make Ford vote on it, although I don't think that would have mattered so much because he's been pretty clear. But basically, Ted Arnott said, even if you do that, I'm not going to pay attention to that vote. I need a unanimous consent vote. So they bailed on it and did a Opposition Day motion about public education funding today. So it seems like it's kind of dropped off the New Democrats' agenda, and I think maybe settled in part, probably in large part, because Ted Arnott decided to change his rule. And now you can't wear keffiyehs in the chamber, but you can wear them everywhere else in the Queen's Park precinct. So I think that rule is preferable for most people and maybe help take the heat off. But yeah, it's been a lot of keffiyeh kerfluffle at Queen's Park, which I think kind of was unexpected and like lasted a long time. It's been basically like a month of this now, which I don't say it's not something worth talking about. I just, again, it's sort of surprising how much this coverage this has driven and how much of a divisive issue
it's
been.
I don't think it's surprising how divisive it is, but I also think it's, I guess it's surprising how divisive it is in terms of there being people who, despite Ford himself having spoken out against this keffiyeh ban, there are a lot of people who seem to support it. And I think that is maybe a little surprising. It's hard to say whether it's in fact unique among legislatures anywhere. That is pretty extraordinary. And that's why I think, and it is to a degree as well, that like it is the sort of thing that gets noticed outside the Queen's Park bubble.
Yeah, you're totally right. And I was trying to think about like, why is this happening at Queen's Park and not other places? And my head was going like, okay, does Queen's Park have like more of an old school attitude, more of a rule following attitude, more of a insular cliqueiness than other government bodies? And like, maybe to a degree, I would say it's not the most welcoming place I've ever been as a even like a white woman. It's not particularly pleasant place.
I mean,
it looks cool, but the vibes.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm discriminated against, but it is definitely much more so than City Hall. It is a place, certainly much more so than Toronto City Hall. It is definitely a place that it feels created to render you uncomfortable to be there.
So I think that has to be a piece of it. But then I think there's maybe a piece of it that the major piece of it might just be Sarah Jama. Like they refuse to let her be a, you know, even though she was elected by the voters of Hamilton Center, she's just her like personage and things she says and how she speaks and what she does and who she is, like just is not allowed it to be there. Right? Like it basically comes down to that.
So I had been under the opinion, the belief that, oh, maybe there was something someone Doug Ford knows or something in his past that had led him to be more sympathetic than expected to the idea of a keffiyeh as an expression of cultural identity that is of the sort that should be allowed in Ontario, in the Ontario legislature. But it turns out there's actually quite a much more mundane or banal or cynical explanation for that. Is there not, Allison?
Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like the Milton by-election, which took place a week and a half ago now, PCs really wanted to hold this seat because they believed that if the Liberals won this GTA riding, it would be too good of news for Bonnie Crombie. Mm-hmm. So they ran a guy who used to be a Liberal, Zee Hamid, who will be sworn in at Queen's Park in the coming weeks. He used to be like a federal Liberal organizer or donor or something, both.
Whereas the Liberals ran Galen Naidu Harris, who's
son of the former cabinet minister.
Former MPP for that area or part of that area.
Right.
Because Galen is an official Nepo baby name.
Yeah, totally. So what appears to have been at play is that the riding of Milton is not predominantly Muslim, but maybe like a quarter Muslim, which is higher than most ridings. As we've talked about on the show before, most of Doug Ford's decision making on important things appears to be made by polling from Nick Kouvalis and strategic advice from his campaign manager, Corey Tenaik. My personal view is they said, you're going to lose this by-election if you look like you're Islamophobic. So do the opposite. No matter how mad your caucus of Israel supporters gets at you. So that's basically what played out. There was an angry caucus meeting at one point after one of these unanimous consent votes. And Doug Ford left it looking very kind of chastened. I feel like he got yelled at. He probably doesn't like this conflict because he probably doesn't give a shit. And he's like, I am just in the middle of this and I got to win this by-election because these guys are telling me to, and I got to do it this way. And now you guys are mad at me and I don't know. Which, I mean, that's being premier for you. Anyways, the PCs won the by-election. Like, Doug Ford was out there door knocking to all the cabinet ministers were. Like, they really, like, put a lot into it, which in a by-election where a lot of people don't turn out, if you have cabinet ministers knocking on a combined 2,000 doors, well, that's going to help you. Doug Ford got what he wanted, and he won the freaking by-election. So yeah. Was it all worth it?
Now, I guess the question is, like,
but at the same time, the CAFEA is still banned. So it's like all of this really amounted to nothing except for fighting.
But the liberals were also very much, it wasn't just the conservatives who were very conscious about
how the CAFEA ban would play impacting the by-election.
This particular by-election. So the son of the former MPP for the area, Galen Naidu Harris. There was a video that Toronto Sun's Brian Lilly shared, in which he had basically promised to be a champion of Palestine at Queen's Park.
So my name is Galen Naidu Harris, the Ontario Liberal candidate for Milton, and you're absolutely right. Civilians in Gaza do need more help. It's long past time for a ceasefire, a humanitarian corridor, and for serious support for those people that need it the most. And you look at the other side and what they're doing, they're standing with Israel, they're banning the CAFEA from being born in Queen's Park in the legislature, and it's not right. So for those folks that are advocating for Gaza, know that I have your back, and I'll be a voice of Queen's Park.
Like what he says about humanitarian aid and a ceasefire and like the specific, like, I guess once you hear someone talking about the specifics of the war in Gaza, you also remember that Queen's Park has no power to do anything about it, which makes like the debate there, you know.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop them from, you know, reaffirming their support for Israel again and again and again.
It's true. So that all brings us to the latest, which are the encampment protests taking place at several Ontario universities. Doug Ford was asked about this during the by-election campaign.
Well, you know, I have all the confidence in the world in our university and our university security or university police. You guys, don't interrupt some students' graduation. Don't interrupt the students from learning. And, you know, we just support our students. So let them learn and just don't cause any problems there. That's all I ask. Everyone should be living peacefully. I can't stand all this conflict. I just hate it, to be honest with you. We live in a province, 110 nationalities from all over the world, 200 languages being spoken. I could walk behind me and I could see the League of Nations, everyone working together, living together, and they're just absolute champions. So this is a place around the world that you can come here, and it's very peaceful and very diverse. So we need to get along. Can't stand conflict like that.
Like League of Nations. Like, was the body set up in the wake of World War I?
It might have not been that diverse either.
Yeah, that's a weird. Like, he could have said United Nations, which would still be like a weird racist statement gesturing to all the construction workers standing behind him. But yeah, no, League of Nations, like a very like Mr. Burns thing. Just going, reaching back to like, what is the 100-year-old example I can give instead of a more current one?
Yes, I'd like to send this letter to the Prussian consulate in Siam by aeromail. Am I too late for the 4:30 autogyro?
But that was still like, as far as Doug Ford goes, that was still a relatively moderate statement. It was like a tut-tut, as it were. And that was on April 30th, and the by-election was May 2nd. May 2nd was also the day that the encampment of U of T set up, like really early that morning, something like 4:30 that morning. And then just a few days after the by-election, I think it was maybe the following Monday, he weighed in again.
I'm a strong believer of freedom of speech, but some of the stuff that's happening, some of what I've seen and heard, it's unacceptable. We need to work together. I always say there's 110 nationalities, 200 languages being spoken here in Ontario. And, you know, we have to work together, live together. I'm not in favor of these encampments on the universities. They need to move. The university has to move these people along.
So Doug Ford, you know, when he started that statement, they're like, I'm a big believer in free speech. You knew there was going to be a but coming. But yeah, no, the U of T has, certainly as far as the University of Toronto goes, the encampment organizers today indicated that in their discussion, they're having discussions with U of T. The discussions are frustrating and incremental, but they're not actually at an impasse.
If the University of Toronto wants to continue playing these bureaucratic games with their students, so be it. All this shows us is that our case for divestment and disclosure is ironclad, and we boldly steel our resolve to fight for every single Palestinian life that has been stolen, that has been ignored.
Quoting or paraphrasing what U of T administration officials apparently told them on Sunday, we don't want this to be Calgary, we don't want this to be Edmonton.
This pro-Palestinian encampment up on campus for just hours brought down in a flash and with a bang. Police moving in using force to remove students and their supporters.
It does sound like they are genuinely reluctant to go down the same road that quite a few other schools, especially in the States and, you know, in Alberta, have gone down. And again, there's also been elsewhere in Ontario, there's an encampment at the University of Ottawa. It sounds like the discussions there may have been even more productive than those at U of T, or at least the organizers are more optimistic about feeling better about the progress that's been made.
Yeah, I think a lot of people on our team are pretty hopeful. We think that the university will do the right thing. They have a history of doing the right thing. And we're pretty confident in the University of Ottawa in siding on the right side of history here.
Cool. So then Wednesday, are you expecting a result?
So on Wednesday, Wednesday's meeting is going to be, we're not sure yet if it's going to be another step in the negotiation or if there's going to be a final result there. But am I hopeful for a result to come at the end of these meetings with administration? Yes, I am pretty hopeful.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas Mattress, that is. Not the Premier, I always want to clarify. There's nothing like waking up from a good night's sleep. Your bedroom was the perfect temperature, your sheets were crisp and fresh. All that's left for you to do is to, you know, parse and untangle the wild dreams you had and try to figure out exactly why you suddenly had a dream that, oh, your dog can get along with other dogs and is finally learning to coexist with them in a friendly, intolerable manner. And of course, to have that deep sleep, you have to have the perfect mattress, like the Douglas. It's got the perfect amount of firmness, medium, to be precise. It's got a layer of Ecolite cooling gel. Plus, you can find amazing bedding at douglas.ca, like cotton sheets, weighted blankets, microfiber pillows. The works.
Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattresses, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That's douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Check it out.
I wanted to tell you about, Jonathan, another thing the PCs are doing on the post-secondary front that is not getting a lot of attention. And that is Bill 166, the Strengthening Accountability and Student Supports Act. Have you heard of this?
Only very recently. I regret that it had entered my radar, or is probably one of those things that sort of buzzes in. I'm like, I can't deal with this now. And then I just push it aside and forget about it.
Well, I mean, you would not be remiss to have missed it because nobody's talking about this. And it was billed as $1.3 billion in new funding for post-secondary institutions in response to the federal government cutting off international or reducing international student visas, which we have discussed on the past, and it's going to financially hurt all the colleges that were relying on them. So that was what they like said this bill in advance was going to be. And it also has some transparency measures about like textbook prices. But it also includes provisions that give the colleges and universities minister, Jill Dunlop, the power to direct post-secondary institutions on what is hate speech versus free speech, which when Dunlop has spoke about the bill, she specifically linked to pro-Palestine protests and anti-Semitism. She says that Ontario's post-secondary schools aren't dealing with hate complaints from students either fast enough or seriously enough, and that she should be able to step in and, like, get better results. And that is, like, by issuing directives that either tell them to change their anti-hate policies, I think, specifically, as opposed to, like, weighing in on individual cases. But
I'll read from the bill. The minister may, from time to time, issue directives. The minister may, from time to time, issue directives to one or more colleges or universities. The minister may, from time to time, issue directives to one or more colleges or universities described in subsection one in relation to the manner in which their policies and rules address and combat racism and hate, including but not limited to anti-Indigenous racism, anti-Black racism, anti-Semitism, and Islamophobia. In other words, it's basically micromanaging the universities and the level of what is and is not considered to be acceptable or even legal speech, right? Like that is wild. That is wild.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it seems like, you know, hypothetically, if a Jewish student made a complaint about anti-Semitism at a protest or in any other circumstance, and somehow the minister, this like got filed up the ladder enough that the minister would even know about it, which like, how does that happen? Right. But it could. And then she gives them a deadline, the college or university in question, a deadline like,
this has now got to be counted as hate speech and you got to fucking deal with it by this other date or else. And it doesn't explain what happens or else, but the directive can include what the or else means. That is almost certainly unconstitutional, but, you know, at best, would be one of those matters where, like, they do something and then sort of let the court people take it to court and spend a few years kicking it around there. Yeah. Or then they pass it, or maybe they'll pass it again with a notwithstanding clause added. Like, especially for a thing that was at least superficially banging a free speech at universities drum. I mean, they're not disguising the fact that they are emphatically meddling, and for a very particular purpose. I mean, you can just, you know, scroll through the committee transcripts to see who spoke at the committee and, you know, what kinds of speech they feel made certain individuals uncomfortable.
Yeah. So student groups are saying that this will allow the PC government to single out and punish Palestinian students or and their supporters. Even Colleges Ontario, which is like the buttoned up like industry association that represents colleges, its CEO even said, like, we already have hate policies, like, this is weird. And like, we could like made them in a very, you know, with the community of the college, and they should not be overridden by the minister. Why would they be?
And universities are private institutions, independent private institutions.
Yeah. And I mean, I bring this up as proof that the PCs have been like more quietly looking at ways to get involved in university speech related to the war in Gaza that before the encampments popped up. So like, this is on their radar of things that they believe need addressing. And also because there was a very like wag the dog moment that happened in relation to this, which is that on April 18th, which was like right after the committee hearings happened on the bill, Ford got asked a question about it at a press conference, and his answer was interesting.
Well, I think there's a lot of tools that ministers have, but we'd rather let the universities make sure they govern their own universities. So you know, the universities, I think they're really good, universities and colleges, and it's really up to the dean to govern his own university. I think we shouldn't get involved in that. That's my personal opinion. There's like I said, there's a lot of tools ministers have that they don't use. It's up to the people. That's what we believe in.
So did he just argue against his own policy?
Yeah, I don't think he knew this bill existed.
Yeah, so a lot of things, a lot of tools, and let the deans leave it up to the deans.
Yeah,
we shouldn't get involved in that.
Yeah,
but that's the opposite of
the opposite of what the bill, precise opposite of what his minister very clearly articulated during committee hearings about the bill days before this. So I think this is a case of Ford not knowing what his government's doing, even though it's doing it in public. And also there's like not that many government bills to know about. There's like, I don't know, 9. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to keep track. And by the end of that day, like a few hours after this, the premier's office clarified that Ford fully supports the bill and there won't be any amendments to it. So
I guess it comes back to the idea of, like, you know, people speaking up in their own defense or not being able to say certain things without it being deemed inappropriate, and the government calling for the full weight of the state to come in, or potentially calling for the full weight of the state, or threatening the full weight of the state to come in and remove from a space people whose presence is seen as a political affront. People should go check out the encampments for themselves. Well, maybe not Doug Ford. I'm not sure his presence would make anything better, unless I guess he wears a big mustache. But there are certainly some mistaken impressions that people might have of what the encampments are. And at least with the U of T one, I visited a few times and have found it to be like a city park on a really nice day if everything were super well organized and maintained. Anyone can just pop by, wander around, and, you know, maybe just form your own opinion of what it is. But if you're Doug Ford, consider the fake mustache.
And that was Wag the Doug, a show about ministers doing things from time to time.
I'm Jonathan Goldsby, and you can find me these days on Blue Sky. That's where I've been tweeting from updates from the various encampment-type things on occasion. Also sometimes hosting Shortcuts, which is the media criticism show that comes out Thursdays on the main Candleland feed.
I'm Allison Smith, and you can find me on Twitter at Queen's Park Today.
Our producer is Sam Connert. It's your first show, Sam. Thank you. Yay.
Welcome.
And Karen Pugliese is our editor-in-chief. And our theme music is, as always, by and or remixed by Nathan Burley.
Our podcast is listener-supported. Go to canadaland.com/join to help us keep this podcast going. Thank you for supporting us while we wag that Doug. You can listen ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Lisa Kudrow was fired from the set of Frasier. Charles Schulz was told he'd never make a living scribbling. Missy Elliott was dropped by her label. And Rita Moreno couldn't land a role of substance for 7 years after West Side Story. The stories of famous names, their lesser-known rejections, and the insights those rejections provide. We regret to inform you, The Rejection Podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.